Cuba like this in Boston would cost millions, I mused out loud. Except the only pyramids you'd see there would be the Red Bass beer logos. Steve said,
I've always wanted to visit Boston.
As the solar disk touched the horizon, he pulled my chair even closer to his so he could kiss me. And when he sat back again, I couldn't tell if that was a trace of lipstick on his mouth or the sun's glowing orange-red light bathing us both. And I'd love to show you around someday, Steve.
Then I'm very glad I waited.
We fell silent again as I thought about how it wasn't the sun that was sinking or setting. It was the world turning away from it. The earth was constantly turning away from the sun and turning back toward it. As it grew darker here in Cairo, somewhere else on the planet, a new day was dawning. The sun never turned away from us. It was always there and sustaining life just by being its awe-inspiring, powerful self. The ancient Egyptians had called the sun the Eye of Re, and there were billions, trillions of sun eyes that would all go blind in the end when the universe stopped expanding and began dying as the momentum from the initial explosion of everything from nothing was exhausted. You know, I found myself thinking out loud again, the Big Bang is a really stupid label for the inconceivable power behind creation. It sounds like science porn. I'm sure a woman didn't come up with it.
Mary.
The quality of Steve's laughter seemed to take the sun's place in the darkness.
Come on, let's head back downstairs. I bought us some bread, cheese, and wine we can have out on the balcony while we watch the sound and light show and talk.
The spectacle of lights at the pyramids was even more enjoyable the second time around for several reasons, beginning with the company and the conversation that replaced the cheesy loudspeaker script. The white pickled cheese was good, but I preferred the roomy Roman cheese, which was hard, sharp, and yellow, more like what I was used to. But all my horizons were expanding, including those of my taste buds, and just about any cheese tastes good with red wine. As a giant fan of purple light shot out from behind the Sphinx so that it shone as though carved from a mountain of turquoise, and the central pyramid was lit up so it gleamed like solid gold, Steve and I commented on the cheese and the wine for a few minutes before getting down to business and talking about dreams. We both loved talking about dreams. They were like wine for the soul. The more we savored them, the more intoxicating they became, but in a way that sharpened rather than dulled my perceptions and filled me with a warm, energizing sense of well-being I already knew I would never tire of. As Steve went inside to cut us some more bread, I whispered, "Thank you, God. Thank you." I loved Carol dearly, but she had made it clear she wasn't interested in talking about dreams. They weren't real to her, especially not in comparison to getting pregnant and engaged and buying furniture for your new apartment, etc. But fortunately, Steve knew dreams could have very real effects on us and directly impact our waking life. When I was inside the Great Pyramid, I had experienced the truth of the concept that everything happens from the inside out. At one point, I declared, "Lucid dreams are like hieroglyphic text messages from heaven." After which I worried I had drunk a little too much, until once again the quality of Steve's laughter made me feel the truth in the old Latin saying, "En vino veritas," in wine there is truth.
Mary, I've been thinking about the angel who blew smoke into your mouth. You said he mentioned something about a virus.
Yes.
I think the virus is sin, and the enemy always makes it seem very attractive.
Right. I had that dream the night before we left for Luxor, or I didn't exactly resist temptation.
Don't feel bad.
He threw his head back in order to get every last drop of wine out of his glass.
Neither did I. There was a time in my lucid dreaming life where all I did was fly around and have sex with beautiful women. And not because I couldn't get the real thing. It was addictive, even though it wasn't really all that satisfying. Since I usually woke up much sooner than I wanted to. It's hard to hold on to a lucid dream when your body starts taking over.
I only felt a ghost of pleasure, I confessed. It was nice, but seeing as I'm still,
Well, you know, a virgin. I nodded.
I know, Carol told me. I didn't ask her to.
It's okay, Steve. I always just assumed you knew. Although I guess that doesn't make sense, because how could you possibly know unless someone told you?
Standing abruptly, he grasped one of my hands, and I let him pull me up and lead me into his living room, where, letting go of me, he nodded toward the couch. I obediently sat down as he went and pulled a tattered 3-ring notebook off his shelf and sat down beside me again.
Before we go out for some ice cream, he said, I want to read you something.
I burst into song. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down, the medicine go down.
You have a pretty voice, but listen up, it's important. The main reason I resisted Christianity was the Johnny Ask-Around version of heaven that has nothing to do with what Christ actually said.
I'm listening. He began reading.
Christ never said that the spirit is good and the body evil. True Christian belief has always affirmed the goodness of God's creation. Disorder occurs when sexual desire reduces other people to objects for its own satisfaction. The body shares in our dignity as persons, just as much as the spirit. Our bodies reveal us, giving form to our innermost being and unique personality. Our bodies are sacramental. They make the invisible visible. The body manifests the spirit. It expresses the person. The sexual embrace, too, was designed to express the invisible love and communion shared between spouses. In a way, then, the body and the sexual embrace are both sacramental. Both are physical signs of spiritual realities. The body was created to be a sign of God's love in the visible world. Creation is God's gift, born from love. Sin arose when man rejected this love and treated creation as something other than a gift. He cast God out of his heart. What is left is a hollow world with all its empty lusts. Lust is a barrier to unity. It keeps men and women from experiencing sexual union as a pure, self-giving communion of persons. Through the ages, many philosophers have spoken of man as though he were divided into two distinct parts, soul and body. This is not the biblical view.
Get out of here.
This is my apartment, sweetheart.
He closed the notebook and returned it to the bookshelf.
Was that your handwriting? Did you write that?
Yes and no. I copied these sections from a book entitled Theology of the Body.
He returned to the couch.
Who wrote it? Grasping my closest hand, he raised it to his lips and kissed it.
Pope John Paul II.
A pope wrote that?
That's not something Johnny Ask-Around would know, is it?
He put my hand down, but kept his own hand resting over it protectively. I whispered,
"Thank you for reading it to me."
He caressed a stray lock of hair away from my face.
My pleasure, Mary. Ready for some ice cream?
I gazed up into his eyes for a long time before replying softly, "Always."
Chapter 11. I believe in God, Father Almighty, Creator of heaven and earth. With my eyes closed, the voices of Christians professing their faith thundered around me, filling the darkness. And in Jesus Christ, His only Son, our Lord. I opened my eyes as a rumbling sound filled the room where I was lying in bed. My dreaming mind had been reciting the Apostles' Creed, which I had begun memorizing. Interesting. I closed my eyes again and was drifting back to sleep when a sound like hundreds of giant fists pounding the ceiling woke me completely. Suddenly, the cracks between the closed window blinds glowed silver, and a heartbeat later, I sat up with the wild thought that World War III had broken out and Cairo was being bombed. When I realized it was just a thunderstorm outside, I was almost more surprised, because this was the first time since I had arrived in Egypt nearly 3 weeks ago that it had rained. Apparently, the heavens were making up for lost time, because it was a total downpour. There was another flash of blinding white light, accompanied by an immense cracking sound. And my cry was swallowed by another roar of thunder that shook the building. The little red numbers on the alarm clock beside the bed blinked out, and I was plunged into total darkness as all the street lights in Garden City and environs were extinguished. Well, I was from New England. I was accustomed to storms. I actually liked their unrestrained power and how a bolt of lightning, when it travels from the cloud to the ground, opens up a little hole in the air, which literally creates a channel between heaven and earth. Thunder is the sound of this passage closing once the light is gone. Hoping the power would be restored by the time I woke up in the morning, I lay contentedly listening to the passionate storm. My awareness is hovering, like a bird, over a vast army of men dressed in black charging across a plain. The intent to murder and wreak merciless destruction is written in every line of their bodies and burns in their dark eyes. Suddenly, I'm standing outside in a pale, clear light directly behind a row of tall knights, clad from head to toe in a softly shining silver armor, where they genuflect, one knee on the ground, the other leg bent before them, to the right of a great cathedral. In their hands, protected by gauntlets, they each grasp the hilt of a great sword, its point planted in the ground at the feet of rectangular plots covered with smooth white rock, at the head of which rise their corresponding tombstones. The knights are waiting, poised for battle. I wonder if they've lost all hope and have positioned themselves before their own graves. Then I perceive that the tips of their blades seem to be lodged in a groove at the base of each plot, as though, when the time comes, they will use their swords to lever and lift the stone slabs, so the bodies buried beneath them will be able to rise from death. I now become aware of a man who has either been standing near me all this time or has suddenly appeared. At once, I know I have to get him to safety. "Come with me," I cry urgently, and grabbing his arm, I lead him away from the cemetery, guarded by the silent knights, to another part of the cathedral complex. I clearly remember being here in an earlier dream, and I know exactly where to go and what to do. I run up a flight of steps, fling open a door into a courtyard, and then pointing toward the far wall, I tell the man he has to open up the barrier. I tell him that he knows how to do it, and that he has to do it now, or will definitely be killed. I watch as he quickly dismantles each piece of the wall, then together we run into the building and down a long corridor which is completely familiar to me. I cry, "This is the room!" But the man heads straight to the end of the hallway, and a strangely ethereal blue barrier. He does something to it, and abruptly, I'm not sure about his identity or his intentions. I almost feel like he used me to get him here for some purpose of his own, because it seems to me the church is now vulnerable to being entered by the approaching enemy horde through this opening he created. But he doesn't look at all afraid, and I'm wondering what he's done and why as I wake up. By the time I got up in the morning, the power had been restored, but I didn't need it as I quickly wrote down my dream by the light of the sun, which had risen in its full, unclouded glory. I set my dream journal back on the table next to my Bible and the lily Liba had given me, which stood erect now in a small glass vase. At least I still assumed the flower was from Liba, but I hadn't seen her again yet. So when a quiet knock sounded on my bedroom door, I ran to open it, looking very fresh and pretty in a lilac and white hijab. Hamoud's youngest daughter stood on the threshold, and it seemed to me that she met my eyes expectantly. I said, "Sabah al-Khayr, Liba. Thank you so much for the lovely flower. Come in, please." She followed me into the room. On the table between the Bible and my dream journal, the lily glowed in the light of the morning sun. I was wondering what to say next when, meeting my eyes, she asked softly, "You also have dreamed of Isa?" I had told Steve about the lily and who, I suspected, had left it for me, So thanks to him, I knew Isa was the Muslim name for Jesus. But I was still thunderstruck as in a flash, an invisible channel was opened between us that shocked me like a silent clap of thunder. The implications of her tentative, hopeful question were earth-shattering. Yes, I said, I believe I have. She glanced from the open door to the table with the lily and back at me. Understanding her completely, I quickly closed the door and locked it. Then we both went and stood next to the table by the window, partially facing each other with the Bible between us. It was a good place to rest our eyes as we kept looking shyly away from each other, both of us apparently waiting to see who would speak first. It was awkward, and sensing her tension, I decided it was my place to take the first step, since she wasn't even really a guest here, but technically a servant. Laiba, I would love to hear your dream, if you want to tell me about it. She looked down at the Bible as she said quietly but firmly, You must not tell my father. Of course I won't. I refrained from mentioning that it had never even crossed my mind to share a dream with Hamoud. Resting one of my hands on the Bible, as I had seen countless witnesses do in a courtroom, I said firmly, I swear. But please, come and sit down with me while you tell me. Obediently, she followed me to the end of the bed, where we both sat with our hands crossed in our laps as she spoke. Her voice was soft, but not hesitant or doubtful, and I got the impression she believed in the reality of her dream, in a way I couldn't picture any girl her age ever doing back in the States. A week before I began coming to work here, she began, I was sleeping when I saw a beautiful man whose clothes were such a bright white I could almost not look at them. He said to me, I am Isa, your savior. You will follow me. Then he took my hand and led me toward a garden so beautiful I knew it was paradise. But at the entrance we stopped, and he told me I must read the Bible and that it would lead me to life. I waited a long moment to be sure she had finished speaking before I said, You are so blessed, Laiba. For Isa, Jesus, actually spoke to you. In my dream, he did not speak, except to say my name, and it was only gradually that I began to understand the man I had seen was Jesus. Will you tell me now, please, your dream, Mary? Smiling at her poetic grammar, I complied with her request. Like you, I was dreaming when at the end of a straight path of white sand ending at the horizon, I saw the tall figure of a man standing against the sky, which was red as blood. At once I knew him, and I felt that he knew me. He began walking toward me, and the feeling of how much we loved each other kept growing stronger and stronger. I knew he loved me, and I loved him. Then he said my name, and I woke up. Laiba's eyes shone, but not with tears. Yes, I forgot to say, but I also felt in my dream Isa's love for me. He said he was my savior, and he told me to follow him, but to do that, he told me I must read the Bible. She looked over at it. The problem with this struck me like another bolt of lightning, only this one opened a rift in the earth I had no idea how to help Laiba across, even though it was no wider than the space separating the bed from the table by the window. Also thanks to Steve, I knew that when the Quran speaks of the gospel, it is referring to an original divine revelation from Jesus Christ, not the four canonical gospels that constitute the Christian New Testament, which are assumed to be corruptions. This meant that Laiba's dream of Isa had put her in a very problematic, even potentially very dangerous position. Here I was, having lucid dream sex and a grand old time in the dream space, as well as in waking life, while this girl sitting next to me, who was 2 years younger, was being commanded by God to risk her life in order to follow him, and I thought going to reconciliation was going to be hard. Right. I stood up, and Laiba immediately followed my lead as she stared at me. Maybe she was hoping I could help her, tell her what to do next. What I wanted to do right now was teleport Steve into the room so he could take over from here.
He would know what to say to Liba, what to do. He would help her, I was sure of that.
Liba, whatever you were planning to clean and wash today, forget about it.
She looked confused, but didn't say anything.
The bedsheets are perfectly clean, as is everything else in this apartment.
Striding over to the Bible, I moved the bookmark to the beginning of Matthew, and returning to Liba, offered her the holy book.
Please take this to the study at the end of the hall, lock the door, and start reading at the place I've marked, which is where Isa is. Carol and I are perfectly capable of cleaning up after ourselves. You have more important work to do. Your father will never know, I promise.
This was a major step she was taking, and I couldn't push her to cross a line that would lead her God only knew where. Traditionally, races began with the sound of a gunshot. But if this Muslim girl dared to set out on the course of salvation through Jesus Christ, it was horribly possible that violence of some sort awaited her. Steve had told me that Egyptian law does not allow Muslims to convert to any other religion. Social ostracism, death threats, and arrests could result in going apostate. A Muslim girl who converted to Christianity was at the mercy of her father and brothers, who could beat her and torture her to force her to deny her conversion. Steve often read the local papers, in which too often there were stories about women who had reportedly been killed by their own family members for converting to Christianity. One such woman, a young mother of two, had been murdered after she married a Coptic Christian. But even knowing all this, I still hadn't hesitated to put the Bible in Liba's hands. And she, in turn, shooting me a look of such penetrating gratitude I knew it would be branded into my soul forever, scarcely hesitated before saying,
"Shukran jazilan, Mary,"
and leaving to obey my instructions. What she was about to do was forbidden, and might possibly end up destroying her life as she knew it, but she appeared as composed as if she was merely on her way to vacuum the living room. As soon as Carol woke up, or rather, after she had showered and was enjoying her first cup of tea at the table, I explained to her what had happened. I was beginning to worry I had gone too far too fast, and that I should have at least consulted her before relieving Liba of all her housekeeping duties for days, probably weeks, maybe even until her mother was scheduled to return to work. Maybe once I got Liba her own copy of the New Testament, she could read it in secret at home. The thought made me nervous. At least I knew she was safe here. I spoke in a hushed voice, even though I knew Liba couldn't possibly hear me locked up in the study on the other side of the spacious apartment. My passionate exposition was occasionally punctuated by Carol sipping her tea, but I knew she was listening intently because she never took her eyes off my face. When I finally stopped talking and glanced back in the direction of the silent study, my friend said firmly, "Relax, Mary. I'm not upset that you didn't consult me first. And even though I'm pregnant and busy shopping for my new apartment and preparing to get married and move out of here, I don't mind also having to do all the cleaning and laundry." She smiled. "Carol, please don't mess with my head right now. Are you really not upset? I'll be happy to do all the housework myself." She sighed. "I'm sure you mean that, but don't worry about it. We'll be fine until Ozzy comes back, and by then I'll be gone, and you can explain to Liba's mother what a terrible job her daughter did in her place."
"Carol, no! She'll suspect something, and..."
She laughed. I grinned back at her. "I'm starting to feel left out," she confessed, staring down into her empty cup as if trying to read her fortune in the dregs at the bottom. "Everyone around me seems to be having life-changing dreams, and I can barely remember mine."
"Maybe you just don't need them. Your life is already changing for the better in so many ways."
"I love you, Mary." She met my eyes. "You're a really good person."
"So are you."
"I want to be." She looked back down into her cup. "But mostly I think I'm just selfish."
"Carol, what are you talking about? You're not selfish."
"Yes, I am." She met my eyes again. "And so are you. We're both spoiled brats. You know we are, Mary.
We've always had everything we wanted. Except brothers and sisters, I reminded her. She replied impatiently, we always had each other. That's true. I always thought, growing up, looking inward now, she spoke more slowly, that religion appealed to people who couldn't have what they wanted in life, so they believed in heaven or in reincarnation or whatever, just to make themselves feel better. And now I'm marrying an atheist because at least he's honest, unlike your parents, who insist on calling themselves agnostics because they can't seem to decide what to believe. It's like people who always buy beige furniture because bright colors are too much of a statement and they don't easily go with everything. At least Simon's non-belief is a decision of some kind. I hate to say it, but I agree. I glanced in the direction of the study again, where Liba was reading the good news for the first time. Carol, what's really interesting is how Liba reacted to her dream of Isa. Back home, if a girl her age who wasn't already a Christian had the same dream, she'd probably just ignore it or accuse right-wing Republicans of subliminal advertising designed to take over her mind. Or she'd think some aspect of herself was acting up, or her subconscious was dredging up religion for some reason or other. Mary, are you making a point here? Yes. The point is, Liba doesn't seem to have questioned the fact that the man in her dream who told her he was Isa really was Isa. She didn't think her subconscious or some aspect of herself was telling her to read the Bible for some reason. She knows perfectly well how dangerous, even deadly, converting to Christianity can prove for a Muslim. Some aspect of herself would need to be suicidal to have such a dream. But she accepted that her dream was real, not symbolic. And when she saw my dream journal next to my Bible, I think it opened a door for her to reach out and obey Jesus, whose love for her she had felt in her dream, just like I did. That's beautiful, she said wistfully, then abruptly added, Mary, I'm going to have baby baptized, and I want you and Steve to be the godparents. I've already talked to Simon about it. He says it won't make a difference to baby one way or the other, and if it makes me happy, he'll play his part. He says he'll always support me on my journey. I cried, that's great! But I was thinking that Steve would have said, our journey, not your journey. Credit cards are wonderful things. Tiny flying carpets made of plastic, embedded with a magical chip that makes it possible to fly from store to store and take home with you everything you desire without the slightest effort, if you're not the one getting the bill at the end of the month. I was feeling guilty about not having called my parents yet and stressed out about what I would tell them when I did. So they paid the price that afternoon when Carol and I went shopping again. Only this time, I was uncomfortably aware of Hamoud, and whenever he met my eyes in the rearview mirror, I smiled and looked away uncomfortably. Until I realized he was probably looking at me more often because I kept smiling at him, when usually I pretended not to notice him glancing back at me. By the time we got back to the apartment, I was exhausted. It had been a very intense day, and although I missed him, I was almost glad I wouldn't be seeing Steve until tomorrow evening, or so I thought. But I had just finished putting all my new purchases in the guest room closet, which was beginning to run out of space, when I suddenly heard a man calling my name, and immediately recognizing the beloved voice, I ran out into the living room and flung myself into his arms. Wait until you hear what I have to tell you, Steve. Carol was in the bathtub, and Liba, after kindly putting my Bible back in my room, had left hours ago, so Steve and I were alone as I told him about her dream and how I reacted to the way she had opened up to me. I didn't tell him about Carol's decision to have her baby baptized and to make us the godparents. I figured that was up to her, or she would give me permission to tell him myself. I said anxiously, "Do you think I did the right thing?" He responded by kissing me in a way that left me in no doubt whatsoever that he completely approved of my actions. When he pulled back, I was out of breath and more relaxed than I had been since Liba dropped her glorious bomb on me. I was happier than ever to rest against him on the couch, but first I told him about my dream from last night. which had happened after I woke up during the thunderstorm, then fell asleep again.
For Muslim believers, it's a joyous revelation to learn that for Christians, prayer is a conversation between a child and their father.
He said,
for decades, an amazing and well-documented phenomena has been happening in the Muslim world, Mary. Both men and women, with no prior knowledge of the Gospels, have been dreaming of Jesus Christ and even having waking visions of him. But like the mystical experiences you've been having, these dreams are more than just dreams. What sets them apart is the intense reality of the experience and what happens after the dream, the desire to surrender your heart and mind to Jesus Christ. These dreams appear to happen to people who are seeking, as best they can, to know and please God.
After a moment, he went on,
I'm acquainted with an Egyptian Coptic priest who told me that young and old, educated and uneducated men and women, even radical Muslims, are coming to Christ and getting baptized, often as a result of a dream in which Jesus appears to them. Former leaders and imams of mosques are now Christian pastors devoted to helping Muslims who are endangering their lives in order to follow Christ. They behave like the man in your dream, who you sensed was in terrible danger, but who instead of hiding, risked himself by taking down the wall in the church and opening it up to everyone, including the advancing enemy forces. There is a conflict raging between good and evil, and there will be a final battle. But in the meantime, the Lord is gathering to himself as many souls as possible.
Steve, the knights in my dream were poised there, perfectly motionless, waiting and ready to open those graves.
The resurrection of the body, Mary, and the new heaven and the new earth.
Like in your dream, when you were floating in outer space, and you saw what looked like another planet on the other side of the sun, but it was really the earth again. That sounds like the new heaven and the new earth to me. Chapter 12. It was noon, the sun was at its zenith, and the shadow cast over my happiness vanished when I finally called my parents. I knew they'd be home because it was 6 o'clock in the morning back in Boston. Before they headed off to work was the only time I could be sure of catching them both. It was also the best time strategically, since neither one of them was a morning person, and they wouldn't have had any coffee yet. I needed every mental advantage I could get, so I ruthlessly dropped my bomb while they were still in bed. But of course, the instant I heard my mother's sleepy voice say anxiously, "Yes, hello?" my heart flew straight home. "Mommy! It's Mary! I'm sorry to wake you up so early." "Mary, is everything all right?" "Oh, yes, don't worry. Everything's great." "Hold on, dear. Your father wants me to put you on speakerphone." "Okay."
"Sweetheart," my dad said in his quiet, husky, early morning voice no one had ever heard in the courtroom, "what's the matter?"
"Nothing's the matter, Dad. I just wanted to tell you that I'm having the time of my life." There was a moment's silence, during which I felt my parents both entertaining the same suspicion that I wouldn't have called them at all, simply sent them emails if something wasn't afoot. Then Mom said,
"That's wonderful, honey."
"Glad to hear it."
Dad was yawning, but when he spoke again, he sounded wide awake.
"So what have you been up to besides shopping?"
I winced. Apparently, he was keeping tabs on my spending. I heard Mom murmur something to him before she said in her pleasant prosecutor's voice, "Carol's parents tell us she's gotten engaged to her boss," which made my friend sound guilty of several crimes. "That's right. His name is Simon, and he just made a huge discovery. Although it might not seem like much, but it's a big deal. And he really loves Carol, and she really loves him." As usual, finding myself on the defensive, I finished lamely, "He's a very nice man." Another silence, or maybe it was just the time lag from talking long distance, before Dad said casually,
"Then why don't they have a proper wedding here? Those tombs he's having her photograph aren't going anywhere, are they?"
Mom took over. "What's the rush? Why don't they just wait until the book is finished, then fly here for the wedding?
Janet won't admit it,
But I know she's upset her daughter is only having a civil ceremony. I've promised to get in touch with the local attorney general to make sure it'll be legal here in the States as well. But, Mom, Dad, I'm calling to ask you if it's okay for me to stay in Egypt a little longer than planned. Naturally, I want to be here for Carol's wedding, and there's just so much to see still, and I promise I won't spend that much more money. But I can't tell you how much I love being here, and there's still so much to see. You know I've waited all my life for this trip, so please say yes. Carol wants me to stay. It took a while, but in the end, thanks to my parents' growing need for caffeine and my assurance that Simon would see to extending my tourist visa, not exactly, so there were no issues on that end, I won my case. Then just before we ended the call, Mom said, "If Carol won't get married here, her parents intend to fly to Egypt to meet Simon before the service. And they've already asked your father and I if we'd like to join them. The holidays are coming up, so maybe we'll all spend Christmas together in Cairo." The Mahdi Platform branch of the Cortigiano restaurant chain was located right next to the river. It was a little too cold to eat out on the patio, but the view from inside was just as good, because the walls were made of glass. On the dark wooden tables, the orange placemats and yellow plates reflected the colors of the sunset, visible across the shining white water behind dark buildings and palm trees. I sat to the right of Steve, facing Carol, who sat on Simon's left. None of us said anything as we studied the menu. My mind was full of everything my parents still didn't know. Carol seemed to be avoiding my eyes. I had sort of confronted her that afternoon, maybe even lectured her a little, about keeping the news of her pregnancy from her parents. But I didn't succeed in finding out when she was planning to tell them, because she didn't know herself. I remembered how she had avoided taking a pregnancy test. Now she was avoiding the major character test she would be subjected to when she told her parents about accidentally getting pregnant out of wedlock in a Muslim country halfway across the world to a man at least 10 years her senior, who also happened to be her employer. Her mother was an elementary school teacher at a private school, and her father was the principal, so she was definitely scoring an F. Fucked up big time. For appetizers, we ordered 2 plates of stuffed mushrooms with goat cheese and pesto sauce. Then I went back to worrying about everything I had yet to tell my parents, and even more about the possibility of them showing up in Egypt. Before meeting Steve, it wouldn't have sounded at all strange to hear my mom say, "spending Christmas together," because that's what everyone did, whether you believed in Jesus Christ or not. The C in Christmas now stood for corporations, consumers, cash, credit cards, Santa Claus, candy canes, etc. I'd often heard it said Christians had stolen the pagan holiday for themselves. Especially in northern climates, feasting and celebrating around the shortest and darkest day of the year was really needed to keep up morale. And the Christmas tree definitely came from the pagan practice of bringing greenery indoors to decorate in midwinter. Mom's casual comment burning in my head, I had brought the subject up with Steve. As usual, when speaking with Stefano Guardini, I learned new and interesting things. He had told me that in the Roman Empire, a holiday linked with mystery religions was celebrated on December 25th, and that early Christians may have decided it was a perfect cover for secretly celebrating the mystery of the incarnation of God through the birth of Jesus Christ. The traditional pagan midwinter festival hadn't become Christmas until the 4th century, when church leaders in Rome finally embraced the holiday, because it helped remind everyone Jesus was a real person who had actually been born, not a disembodied spirit who flitted in and out of the world. So it made sense to celebrate his birthday at the time of year that heralded the return of the sun, which also helped souls more smoothly transition from paganism to Christianity. Since then, all sorts of other things, stemming from different traditions and legends, had been tacked on to the holiday. For dinner, I decided to have the frutti di mare risotto with shrimp and baby squid and mascarpone cheese mixed in to make the rice extra creamy. I'd had so much bread and cheese in the past 3 weeks, I was amazed I hadn't gained any weight yet, as the scale in Carol's bathroom testified. Between luscious mouthfuls, I once again went over the list of everything my parents didn't know yet. They didn't know my best friend was pregnant, that Simon had informally made me a job offer as his admin, that I would soon be living alone in the Garden City apartment when Carol moved in with Simon, and, most important of all, they didn't know about Steve, the fact that I was in love with him while at the same time falling in love with someone else, Jesus Christ, and preparing to receive the sacraments of reconciliation and confirmation. Well, I thought, it's high time someone in our family made a decision about what religion they fully believed in. Wrapped up in my own thoughts, I didn't notice until dessert, which I opted out of, that none of us had said very much, but simply eaten in a companionable silence that made my heart feel even fuller than my stomach and in a much nicer way. Only people who felt comfortable with each other, who knew they would be seeing a lot of each other, who had a future together, could dispense with small talk over supper and simply enjoy eating and relaxing together. I felt content just breathing the same air as Steve. It was night, and the palm trees outside the restaurant were lit up like year-round Christmas trees when we left the restaurant and went for a walk along the corniche, Simon and Carol leading the way. They were holding hands, but unlike Steve and I, they seemed to be making an effort to look relaxed and comfortable with this intimacy. Normally, Carol was holding her camera in both hands, capturing the scene, but now she was a part of it, and there was no way to detach herself from life, as she was obliged to focus on very specific events she would be participating in, not merely observing. Now and then, Simon let go of her hand to point out something either across the street or the river, and a few minutes always passed before, as if casually, he gripped her hand with his again. God help him. He would soon have an infant as well as a teenager to help raise and watch grow up. Okay, by the time the baby was born, Carol would be 20, but still, the Egyptologist had his work cut out for him. Steve squeezed my hand gently.
You're deep in thought this evening, Mary.
I smiled up at him. So are you.
It's true,
he admitted, giving me a quick kiss on the lips.
I've been thinking about Liba.
I was ashamed of the stab of jealousy I suffered, but it was too late, and like an invisible and terrible spurt of blood through which I felt my life draining away, I was afraid he would take the pretty innocent girl under his wing now, as he had taken me, because all he really cared about was bringing me to Jesus, and once I was safely in the arms of our Savior, he would move on. It was such a vile thought. I was shocked to think it had come from me. It was like discovering that a snake had been coiled up somewhere deep and dark inside me, just waiting to strike and poison everything I felt and wanted to believe. But it was too late. I couldn't escape the venom already in my system, which was part of me. I could, however, feel ashamed of it and fight it and do my best to return to sanity and health, which I managed to do in a matter of seconds, even as I remained shaken by the experience. Meanwhile, Steve was saying,
I'd like to put Liba in touch with a former imam who's a Coptic Catholic now. Through him, she'll meet other young people like herself, some of whom have also come to Christ as the result of a dream.
Oh, I'm so glad you can do that, Steve. It's amazing so many Muslims are dreaming of Jesus. Thinking of my mastaba dream, I wondered out loud, do you think there's something about this place, I mean Egypt, that makes it easier to have mystical dreams?
It's not just happening in Egypt. The phenomena of Muslim believers dreaming of Jesus is happening throughout the Middle East and Africa.
Steve, why do you say Muslim believers instead of just Muslims?
Because everyone born to Muslim parents is automatically a Muslim, and you can't just decide, like in other cultures, whether you want to practice your parents' faith or not. Islam is a social and cultural identity inseparable from the religion. If you go apostate, leave Islam for another religion, you lose your home, your family, your friends, your job, your neighborhood, maybe even your country and your life. But just because you're born Muslim doesn't mean you yourself are personally a believer.
Thank you so much for buying Liba her own copy of the New Testament. I can't wait to give it to her tomorrow. This morning, she got to the apartment really early, before Carol and I were up. I didn't even hear her come into my room, but when I woke up, my Bible was gone. I thought maybe she'd come early to get some reading done before she started on the housekeeping, because she felt guilty about shirking her responsibilities, but she didn't leave the study except once to use the bathroom. And she didn't put my Bible back until about 10 minutes before her father was supposed to pick her up. She's already read Matthew and Mark, while I'm still on the first pages of Matthew.
Mary, I wanted her to have a copy of the gospel she could fit into a pocket or a purse, a copy that would be easy to hide.
It was still relatively early when Carol and I returned to the apartment, but judging from the expression on her face, she was feeling just as tired as I was, or more. I still couldn't detect any outward signs that she was pregnant, and wondered how long her loose cotton shirts would help hide her condition. "Carol, I'm sorry," I said as I followed her into the kitchen, where I poured myself a glass of water while she began filling her tea kettle. "Sorry for yelling at me, you mean?" I hadn't yelled at her. At least that's not how I remembered it.
"Yeah, that.
How are you feeling? Simon looked happy when you ordered the grilled chicken instead of a fruit and yogurt salad." She replied without looking at me, "He's being very sweet." I moved to a spot from which I could see her profile. "And that's good, right?"
"Yes."
"Carol, are you okay?" Turning up the burner, she replied coolly, "Not really." "Can we talk about it?"
"We already talked about it this afternoon."
She busied herself getting the tea ready. I kept my tone light. "I talked. You just ignored me."
"There was no need for me to say anything. You pretty much covered it all. I still haven't told my parents I'm pregnant, and I have no idea how and when I'm going to. They're gonna completely freak out. I thought I could have everything settled first, you know, I'd be married and living in Mahdi, and I could get Mom all excited about helping me decorate the baby's room. But now you're telling me they're thinking of flying here for the wedding when there isn't really going to be one, just some stupid civil service according to Islamic law. Can you just see my dad's face?" I grimaced.
"Can't you just tell them not to come?"
"Mary, you know what they're like. That will only make them suspicious. They can't make it in time for the service anyway. They have no idea it's happening so soon. But I still have to call them and tell them they're going to be grandparents."
"It won't be so bad," I assured her, trying to convince myself. "When they meet Simon and see how much he loves you, and they realize you're looking and feeling great and living in a beautiful place, they'll relax and look forward to the birth of their grandchild, who they'll only be able to see once or twice a year." The only response I could muster was, "That's better than nothing." Surprise prodded me fully awake when she said firmly, "You're right. It is better than nothing. And personally, I'm not really upset I'll have baby all to myself. I don't want my child to grow up as ignorant as I did about what life is really like in other countries, what the people are like. I also have no intention of spoiling my kid like I was spoiled."
"See? You're already looking at the bright side."
I headed for the door. "I'm going to wash up now and call it a night, if that's okay with you."
"You're going to sleep so early?"
The way she smiled told me she had crossed some invisible Rubicon in her emotional and mental landscape that had brought her to a good place.
"Impatient to try and have another lucid dream?"
"No, I'm not going to bed right away. After I shower, I'm going to read my Bible."
Not long afterward, smelling of lavender and rose petals, I opened the New Testament to where my bookmark was in Matthew.
"Keep on asking, and you will receive what you ask for. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, everyone who seeks finds, and to everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. You parents, if your children ask for a loaf of bread, do you give them a stone instead? Or if they ask for a fish, do you give them a snake? Of course not. So if you sinful people know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give good gifts to those who ask him?"
Matthew 7:7-11. That evening, instead of just stopping after two or three verses, I read all the way through to the end of chapter 7. Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on solid rock. Though the rain comes in torrents and the flood waters rise and the winds beat against that house, it won't collapse because it is built on bedrock. But anyone who hears my teaching and doesn't obey it is foolish, like a person who builds a house on sand. When the rains and floods come and the winds beat against that house, it will collapse with a mighty crash.
Matthew 7:24-27. I slipped into bed and lay thinking about all I had read. My mind felt saturated by the words in red ink spoken by Jesus, as if by a mysterious wine my soul was drinking up thirstily, absorbing them and feeling their truth even as my brain stumbled over them in places. Then remembering how Steve had encouraged me to pray, I dared to say, speaking softly out loud, "Lord, one night in a dream, I would love to see how you appeared on earth." Then I lay there, cozy under the covers, thinking about Steve until I fell asleep. I'm sitting on some kind of couch set against the wall, sharing it with another girl, a young woman like me in the prime of life. We are just two of the many, the multitude of people gathered in what feels like a large, white, multi-story mansion. The place is so crowded, some of the people are standing, especially those around the front door, which is directly to my right, about 12 feet away. I'm leaning back against the couch, facing in the general direction of the entrance. I'm relaxed and very happy to be here. I can't describe the gathering as a party, because I'm not aware of music and no one is dancing. Also, the way everyone is mingling is in no way random or superficial, and though I see people smiling, I hear no loud, drunken laughter. The truth is, I have eyes only for a tall, strong-looking young man with a pure complexion. His hair is dark and full and falls just short of his broad shoulders. He is the one I desire. I watch his every move as he interacts with some of the people surrounding him, those in his innermost circle, the big group closest to the front door. As he moves calmly but purposefully among them, I perceive mostly men, but also a handful of women. There is an interlude when a woman who does not belong to his inner circle tries to cut his hair, during which he sits with his back to me, but he soon gets up again, and I know it's impossible to trim his hair, which grows as it wills and never conforms to any overly neat clipping. I'm not surprised, for in my eyes his hair, like everything else about him, is perfect, as in perfectly desirable, inseparable from the whole package. He's wearing a long-sleeved white shirt with some fine black trim on the edges, and he never stops serenely communicating with his closest friends. Suddenly, he turns in my direction and begins walking straight toward me, effortlessly making his way between all the people standing between us. I can't believe my eyes. All this time, he knew I was watching him? All this time, he was aware of my desire for him? I'm stunned, but even more thrilled by his powers of perception and by his subtle yet undeniable smile as he gazes down into my eyes. He reaches me in seconds, and my mind is blown again when he bends over, and I realize he is going to kiss me in front of everyone. My face is already turned up toward his, and I willingly receive his kiss. His kiss feels like both a public and an intimately personal promise. I don't close my eyes as I experience the sensation of his firm yet tender, ideally full lips pressed against mine. I'm filled with joy, and thinking about what's happening, I become aware of a refreshing coolness where our breaths converge. Just when I sense he is about to pull back, I finally respond to his kiss. I'm scarcely aware of what happens after he straightens up and walks away toward the main entrance, but I remember the expression on his handsome face as he held my eyes after our kiss,
and his smile, so gentle yet intensely real and warm. All my feelings become one in a pure, joyful amazement. I realize now he was always aware of how much I wanted him, even though, to my eyes, he gave no sign he noticed me among all the other people. I had no idea he was always conscious of my longing to be with him and to be his. Propelled by this dynamic combination of surprise and elation, I get up and begin ascending a steep flight of white stairs. But after a few steps, I pause and press one of my cheeks against a wall, nearly overwhelmed by the comprehension of how sensitive he is. He is the most sensitive of men, and his discernment is inseparable from how much he truly cares for me. No words can describe the blissful shock that ignited in my mind at this discovery. He sees and is aware of everything like no one else ever is or can be. He felt and saw me longing for him, hopefully following his every move. And so he came to me and looked at me and kissed me in a way that left no doubt we would be together. For the rest of the night, in all my other dreams, where I'm trying to help family members and a handful of other people in some way, I keep remembering this experience, the night's glorious heart and soul. Chapter 13. The following day, Liba insisted on cleaning the bathroom before disappearing into the study. I had been tempted to tell her about my dream, but I couldn't bring myself to speak of it. The experience had been so intimate and mysteriously tailored to my soul and culture. I felt Liba would never encounter Jesus in such a setting and in such a way, because in waking reality, it was possible she had never been at a big house party where young men and women mingled together freely. And I was pretty sure that being kissed in public by a young man, much less by Jesus, wasn't the sort of film that would play in her dreaming mind. I imagined her relationship with Isa would be scripted for and by her Muslim soul and different from mine. And yet the story was the same. We were both falling in love with the same person who was also God. She received Steve's gift of a little Bible she could conceal in her purse with a look of surprise and delight as she reverently accepted it with both hands as though it was alive. Like a little white bird with golden trims, whose wings would spread and beat as her own heart whenever she opened it, and which was hers to keep and protect and treasure, or to abandon, because it would be too dangerous to raise to maturity, because if it grew in her soul and flew toward heaven, she would most probably be forced to leave everyone beloved and everything familiar behind forever. I was already in love with Jesus, and although it seemed Liba was heading down the same path, I really couldn't be sure. Her expression was friendly but guarded, as if she wore an invisible veil over her eyes that concealed what she was thinking and feeling, so that I saw mostly her lovely smile. She was reading the Gospels because Isa had told her to, but I couldn't know the effect they were having on her. Maybe they would fail to inspire her to risk losing everything. What would I do if I was in her shoes? What if I had known from the start that when I told Mom and Dad I had come to believe in Christ and was now one of his disciples, that they would immediately disown me, throw me out of the house, and never speak to me again because I had brought shame upon our family name for all generations to come? Would that have discouraged me from listening to Steve's interpretations of my dreams and believing the loving presence in my dreams was Jesus? Hell yeah. I probably would have listened to Sir Richard Gerald Ashley and believed I was dreaming about him and our love that had lasted through the ages, or at least since the time of the pharaohs, when I had been one of his favorite queens. Right. I tossed these thoughts around in my head while I whipped up an omelet for brunch. Carol's appetite was beginning to catch up with mine, undoubtedly because she was pregnant and baby was apparently demanding more than vegetables, rice, fruit, and yogurt.
However, I had no doubt that not in this universe or in any infinite number of parallel universes would Carol Jordan crave pickles with ice cream. I thought out loud, why is it some people find